a nice day for a white wedding.
Here's Johnny!
You, me, the 80s and the 90s.
Songs are memories, music is therapy. Hello and welcome to You, Me, the 80s and the 90s. As always, I'm Wayne Tunks.
And I'm Emma Louise.
Emma, the last episode.
Oh, it's a bit bittersweet really, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, all good things must come to an end, sadly. Yeah. But 3 years has been pretty amazing. I think that's been great.
Awesome.
It's 71 been so episodes fun. In total.
Yeah, I know. That's more than ever. Yeah.
Yeah. 69 of them have been good at least. I don't know. Episode one, bit crap.
Oh, my God. Episode one, I didn't know what I was doing. No one listened to episode one. Oh, dear.
But, yes, we've had people have said really lovely things about the podcast, which is really delightful. And so thank you to everyone who has listened to us over these past 3 years or anyone who is discovering us after we've finished. We're sorry.
Yes. But there's 71 great episodes. Well, 70, as you said, great episodes to go back and listen to.
Yeah. Life is just getting very, very hectic. So, but yeah, we are coming to a close. But yeah, thank you very much.
Indeed.
Now it is the last episode for the year, so we always do a bit of a look at new music and Christmas songs. And I've got to make a disclaimer. I've been one of these, you know, I'm 47. I've been one of these older people that is like, I still like new music. This year I struggled.
Oh.
I really struggle with new music this year. And maybe it's because I've been working with 80s music on the radio station, but I just have not been.
Do you think that maybe you haven't been listening to as much new
music? I haven't been going out to discover new music like I normally do.
Yeah.
And so the music I was hearing, I wasn't impressed with. And I was worried I wasn't going to find a favourite song for the year until a song came out a few months ago that did blow me away.
Yes.
But, yeah, I'm sounding like an old guy with that. I don't like new music.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, the track I picked as well, it's not really written this year. It was, you know, it's a redo.
It's a cover,
Of someone else's. So why don't I just launch into it?
Why don't you?
Go straight in. I have chosen Happier Than Ever by Kelly Clarkson. Happier Than Ever is, of course, originally by American singer-songwriter Billie Eilish, released back in 2021. It's about Eilish's anger towards a former toxic relationship, opening with a beautiful soft vocal performance and building to what has been described as a volcanic outpour of anger and emotion.
Whoa, we've all had those.
We have indeed. The original version was obviously very, very well received. It got, I think, 4 nominations at that year's Grammy Awards, or this year's actually, because this year's is about last year. Yeah. Nominated Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Best Music Video, Best Pop Solo Performance. It charted well as well in many countries, got to 3 here in Australia, I think. And it was like a terrific song that my daughter actually first introduced me to. But that version is not the one we're discussing today, of course. Wayne, it was you, I believe, that introduced me to Kelly Clarkson's version earlier this year. And to be honest, much like yourself, I think I prefer this to the original.
I know. Sorry, Billie Eilish fans.
Yeah. Like, I really do like Billie's. When Coco first, you know, played that for me, I really loved it. But, yeah, this version is just awesome.
I feel like there hasn't been a – sorry, I don't know if you're still going. I feel like there hasn't been a cover version that Kelly Clarkson has done that I haven't liked, and she's done a lot.
She has.
She's even got a phrase for it, Kellyoke.
Kellyoke, because that, I think, started, on her Kelly Clarkson show.
Yeah.
Kellyoke is a thing that she, every week she does
every episode.
Yeah.
She does. I was so disappointed. When I was in LA a couple of years ago, I had a look, and they were filming an episode and there were tickets, but I wasn't arriving into LA till later that day, so I just missed. I would have gone to the audience and that would have been so great to see him perform live.
Ah, oh, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it was after performing this on her show back in September last year that she just loved doing it, and so she's recorded and released it as the lead single from her seventh extended play, Kelly-Oki, earlier this year. It was released in June, in fact, reaching number 47 on the Billboard Top Album Sales and I think number 50 on the UK digital album charts. They're the only two charts I could find it on. But, God, it's good.
Yeah, I bought it on iTunes. I love it. And the whole album is fantastic as well, actually. There's really good covers. There's a cover of Blue Bayou, which I really love what she does with that.
Beautiful.
Call Out My Name, which is a Weekend song. Queen of the Night from Queen Whitney.
Yes.
Trampoline, a song I didn't know as well. And Fake Plastic Trees, a Radiohead song. So if you look at the different artists that she's chosen, really fantastic.
Yeah. That voice on her and the karaoke, it suits her because of where she came from as well.
Yes.
Obviously, American Idol was her platform
to
introduce her to the world.
And, you know, and she just stole that season. And while there were some really talented singers on that season, I don't think there was any doubt who was going to win that season.
Yeah. Which season was it? It was
one.
Season one, right.
Yeah.
The first one. Gosh.
Yeah.
She actually, I read, didn't want to come first because the winner apparently was contractually bound to make a musical rom-com and she knew she was no Meryl Streep, her words, not mine.
Yeah.
But after she was declared the champ, she pleaded to not have to do that, but apparently couldn't get out of it. So there is a film out there that I didn't know about called From Justin to Kelly.
Yes, the runner-up is in it as well. I haven't seen the movie, but I know about it.
Panned by critics, won the Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Musical of Our First 25 Years back in 2005.
Wow.
So poor Kelly.
Let us stick to the singing. You know what? I like when people can admit. You know what?
Exactly.
This is what I do.
I'm a singer, not an actor.
And let's look at her. We know how good of a singer she is. But then now she's also proven what a great talk show host she is. Have you seen any segments from her?
I haven't, no. Is it good?
She's a real natural.
Mm.
You know, like when she interviews somebody, it's like two friends catching up. She's really good at it. She's found a niche, which
That's
I think
awesome.
Is really wonderful.
How many shows are there out there? Like everyone's got a show, don't they?
Yeah, some don't last as long as others.
Yeah,
but,
how long's hers been going, I wonder?
A few years.
Apparently this was a no-brainer when she was, you know, working out all those beautiful list of songs you were talking about for her EP. She knew that, well, she said herself, the song was just so, I think, poignant for so many people. So that one really did hit home for me and I really, really, really wanted to do it. And, yeah.
Yeah, I think
Thank goodness she did.
Yeah, and I really like the way that she interpreted and just the she just goes straight from that softer stuff into bang.
Yeah.
And just, you know, she does Angry Well. Like Never Again is one of my favourite Kelly Clarkson songs.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people didn't like Never Again. It was one of the first songs of hers that didn't do as well, but I just loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I've been that angry.
Yeah. It's good to sing loudly in a car when
you're
letting off some steam.
And I think we were touring kid shows when that song came out, so you and I probably screamed that a lot in cars.
Once or twice. Yeah.
I hope the ring.
So, yeah, that's me. I hope that others out there enjoy the song as much as I do.
And if you haven't heard it, go check it out.
Oh, please do. It's really worth a listen. As is yours, my friend.
Okay. Now, I was actually really genuinely shocked this didn't get any votes.
None at all.
Shocked.
Really?
Aghast. Shocked.
That's weird because you were quite convinced that you wouldn't even be able to pick this because you thought so many people would vote it in.
And I was wrong.
Yeah, he can admit occasionally, ladies and gentlemen.
In the last episode, I'll admit I was wrong about this, about your bad taste, people, about your bad taste. All right. So, as I said, I really struggled. But then towards the end of the year, there were a few good songs came out. JP Sachs had a new song. I love him. Pink's got a really great song out
that
I love. I love it. Oh my god, I love it
because it's more. Never gonna not dance.
Yeah, because it's more pop, and you know I love pop. Mm. Actually, it sounds a bit Kelly Clarkson, which is maybe why I like it. But the one that I have chosen, Sam Smith and Kim Petras, Unholy.
Pop it in, yeah, she put it down slowly. Oh,
As I said, for the first time ever, I really struggled with new music this year. And maybe, as I said, it's more because I was focused on retro stuff and I wasn't hunting great songs. Or maybe music just isn't as good. Or maybe, to quote the great Danny Glover, maybe I'm just getting too old for this beep. While Sam Smith got famous for ballads, they have been steering more towards dancing music and fully embraced it on this great track and joined by German icon Kim Petras. It has been her biggest hit ever and Sam's first US number one. It also hit one here in Australia, Canada, the UK, and many other places.
Yeah. It's a great song.
So good. Oh, my God. Like, it's not even close with any other song this year.
Well, maybe happier than Kelly Clarkson.
No, but for me, was not even close. Yep. It is my favourite song of the year.
Yeah. Yep.
So good.
Yeah. It really is. And it's a real change for Sam Smith.
Yeah.
Their previous work is kind of evolved.
Yeah, and you see slower. That they have been slowly getting there. You know, that really great song with Calvin Harris, Promises.
Yeah.
Diamonds was a bit dancier as well, but this is just full on embracing it. And I think having Kim Petras on the track as well, whose music is just so good.
I don't know a lot of her music.
And I think that she is quite, you know, underground. It's mainly been the, you know, the gay community that has really embraced Kim's music. And it was younger gay men who introduced me to, you know, Kim Petras. I think on Instagram they were putting stuff about it. Kim, I'm like, I'm going to check her out, and just loved her music.
Yay, yay. Yeah, the film clip as well I watched for the first time, I think, yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, it's so well shot, so theatrical. Yes.
Vaudevillian.
Yes, and the way it even starts, you know, with the husband helping his wife out of the car and goodbye, darling, here's your coat. Sorry, I can't be. It just, it's great.
Because mummy don't know daddy's getting hot at the body shop.
Until she found that little franger in his pocket of the coat and the... Anyway.
And so the Body Shop is an infamous LA Sunset Strip club.
Mm.
Serves as inspiration for the song.
Mm.
I haven't been there, obviously. Yeah.
I was about to ask.
No, I did not go to the Body Shop and do something unholy.
What fun, though.
Yeah. I also love that. I'm going to get a bit political for a second. Mm. I love that in the current climate in America, where your right-wing pundits are just basically blaming transsexual people for everything.
It's weird.
I stubbed my toe. Oh, my God, it's a transsexual's fault. I love that Kim Petras has just become the first transsexual person to claim a number one spot in the US.
Yes. Yes.
And Sam Smith is the first non-binary person
to claim a number one spot
in the US, in your face, right-wingers.
Yeah, doing it together. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Kim Petras was also, I read, the world's, or at the time, I think, the world's youngest person ever to undergo the
hormone therapy,
affirmation surgery. Yeah, 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 yeah. I think she was 16 at the time.
Yes, yes. Sorry, she started hormone therapy at 12 and transitioned 4 years later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, she is an icon in the gay community, and I'm so happy that this song gave her an opportunity to be heard and seen by so many more people, and more people will now go and discover her really rich back catalogue.
Yeah, of course.
Now, Sam Smith, they have topped the charts in the UK many times. This is their 8th number one. So, you know, and great songs that have done it, Money on My Mind, Stay With Me, Lay Me Down featuring John Legend, Writings on the Wall, Too Good at Goodbyes, La 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 with Naughty Boy, and Promises with Calvin Harris. Like, just great songs.
Yeah.
I'm a massive fan. I was front row at their concert a few years ago.
I didn't know you went to
Sam Smith concert. Just after I got off the plane from America, I went to see Sam Smith the following weekend.
Ah.
So good. I actually was on a plane when tickets went on sale, and it was just landing as tickets were going on sale. I literally turned my plane, and so they're like taxiing the plane. This was like a domestic flight, but I was buying tickets and managed to get a front row seat.
That's awesome. Apparently, they and I'm not big into the tick of the tock and stuff, but they teased the song earlier this year through a TikTok clip, and that
you've never sounded older.
I know.
The tick of the tock.
The tick of the tock. Well, that's the way to go now, though, because that created a huge buzz and anticipation because that went viral.
Yeah.
You know, and so everyone was waiting for this.
I remember once upon a time going viral was not a good thing.
No. Now it's all anyone wants to do.
Yeah. I think, you know, a few people at the body shop went viral. Yeah.
But, yeah, TikTok has, yeah, helped it to, I think, really punch out into the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's really great, the songwriting team. So Sam worked with Jimmy Napes, who they have worked with a lot, but also Omar Fendi, who really helped Little Nas X find a really great sound and used quite a bit of that Middle Eastern beat in his music, and then has used it in this song for Sam and just sounds great.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Good pick, Wayne.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Now let's have a look at our audience's pick. And these were interesting. And there was no clear winners. It was very close the whole way.
Okay.
So, like, I was really shocked that Harry Styles didn't make the top five.
Yes.
But came sixth.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
With what song?
As It Was.
As It Was. Okay.
Do you know that song, just quickly, at the beginning where the little kid says, "Hey, Harry, I just want to say goodnight to you." First time I heard it, I thought the kid said, "Hey, Harry, I just want to take a knife to you." That's what it sounds like. "Hey, Harry, I just want to take a knife to you." Listen to it. You will hear it. All right. That's
different. Anyway.
But number five, "I'm Good" by David Guetta and Bebe Rexha. "'Cause I'm good, yeah, I'm feeling." The song reached one in Australia, Canada, the UK, and many other places, as well as getting to seven in the US.
Okay. It's a catchy song.
Oh, it samples a very famous and a very annoying song. And I actually probably prefer this to the original. I was never a fan of Blue.
Yes.
I've got to admit.
I'm Blue. Dee-dum-dee-dum-dee.
Yeah, I was never a fan.
That, again, though, was catchy. Yeah, it's like that earworm stuff that just gets into your head and, yeah.
Yeah.
Bebe Rexha, she's fun.
And very talented. Bebe Rexha is a really great songwriter and has written songs for many other people.
Has she?
Yeah.
Oh,
I yeah, like she started as a songwriter.
Oh, interesting.
So I actually think it's really interesting that she's done this song with David Guetta because she was really unhappy with him.
Really?
When they did "Hey Mama" together, and it got credited to David Guetta featuring Nicki Minaj at first, even though Bebe Rexha's voice is on the track, and it wasn't until later that Bebe actually got credited.
Oh, okay.
So there was a little bit of controversy there, but clearly it's all made up, and she probably would have made a lot of money from "Hey Mama" because it was a big song.
It was huge.
And it's a really good song too.
Is that "Hey Mama"? No,
that's Black Eyed Peas.
That's right.
Yeah.
I've got to go listen to
that. Yeah, yeah. But it was when Nicki Minaj was really in.
Oh, okay.
Like everything she was doing was like gold. Like I lived with somebody, we were together for a very long time, who he was really into rap. So I feel like at the time there was a lot of rap that I got into.
Mm.
And, like, I was really heavily into Nicki Minaj at the time.
Were you?
I really loved Nicki. She was my favourite. And I haven't liked what she's done as much recently. But some of her albums just are incredible.
I don't mind her new song. What's that one?
Yeah, the one that samples Super Freak.
Yeah. Super Freaky Girl.
Yeah. And I feel like that's kind of going back to what she was doing.
Yes. Yeah, she's fun.
Yeah.
We digress. With Bebe Rexha, I really love her "Back to You" that she did with Louis Tomlinson from One Direction.
Yeah.
That's a good song that was underrated, I think, and never charted very well here.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. And, you know, she's done lots of different genres of music because she did that country song as well, "Meant to Be." Was that with Florida Georgia Line?
I don't know that one.
But it went to number two here in Australia. "If It's Meant to Be, It's Meant to Be."
Oh, that one. Yeah. Oh, of course. Okay.
So, yes, so this is her first time getting to number one in Australia. So she got to two with Meant to Be, which did go to number one in a lot of places.
Yeah.
David Guetta's third time here in Australia. He went to number one with Sexy Bitch.
Yeah.
Song About You. That was by him and Akon. And he did went to number one with Snoop Dogg and Wet.
Snoop Dogg.
Which I don't actually know that song. I feel, yeah.
You're not a big Snoop Dogg?
No, I don't mind Snoop Dogg. I just don't know that song.
Okay. You know who discovered David Guetta? Kelly Rowland.
I think we'd say Clarkson.
That would be too good. No, Kelly Rowland, apparently. She saw him DJ back in Cannes, back in, I don't know when that was, to be honest, but they got together, recorded When Love Takes Over, and from there, of course, his career took off, and Rowland helped spread the word, because he's done some great songs.
Oh, legend, really. And, I mean, if you look at When Love Takes Over, which was the song that broke him, that is one of the greatest dance songs ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's certainly Kelly's best solo song. And I loved a lot of what Kelly's done solo, but it's her best solo song. Mm. Now, this song originally and intriguingly was demoed in the mid-2010s.
Mm.
And they debuted the song at a Miami EDM festival, Ultra, in 2017. They didn't complete it back then, but when a snippet of the song went viral on TikTok in August 2022... Guetta recognised it was time to finish it, and BB laid down new vocals, and they came up with a different instrument production and then released as a single, like in August 26th, so they did it fast.
Had it not gone viral on TikTok, he might have just left it there.
Can we just stop saying the word viral? There's executives, people. We need to go viral this week, people. We need to. I don't know what that means, but we need to get the internet going viral.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, good song. Not my favourite of the year.
Yeah. Oh, catchy.
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 Viral, catchy. Wow. It's like everything's there.
Let's move on.
All right. This is a song that I did love this year. It is the return of an icon. At number four, it's Rihanna, Lift Me Up.
Drowning in an endless sea.
The song reached 5 in Australia, 3 in the UK, 2 in the US, and 1 in South Africa and Switzerland. And I will say that that's at time of recording, because it is still on the charts right now.
Yeah, right. So it's very new.
It is. Yeah,
hence,
it is quite a new
song.
That's
why I didn't actually know it.
Yeah, there's a couple on this chart that I didn't know, but this one I did know, and I bought this one. I love it. I still buy music.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
I love Rihanna, but I love Rihanna doing ballads.
Yeah, yeah.
Her ballads are just so Stay, Unfaithful. Oh, some really good ballads.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Who was it written by? It was written by a few people. Nigerian singer-songwriter Tems wrote it alongside Swedish composer Ludwig Göransson. As well as the Black Panther director, Ryan Coogler, and Rihanna.
Yeah.
Because it was, of course, written for Black Panther, wasn't it? Well.
I think it became for Black Panther. But it was really written as a tribute to Chadwick Boseman, who sadly passed. You know, very inspirational man, great actor, kept his illness a secret so he could still shoot projects. And was apparently quite ill while he was doing it and just didn't let people know and just kept working. Like, what a absolute legend.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tems has come out in interviews sort of talking about the inspiration and stuff, and he said, after speaking with Ryan and hearing his direction for the film and the song, I wanted to write something that portrays a warm embrace from all the people that I've lost in my life, which is a beautiful image. He said, I tried to imagine what it would feel like if I could sing to them now and express how much I miss them.
Yeah.
And you can hear that. It's just.
Yeah.
Oh,
and that's because her voice is so emotive.
Yeah.
So emotive. Really, really stunning. And I think it's really interesting that a lot of, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, soundtracks were massive. You couldn't have one without the other, essentially. Mm. You know, like that's what songs were just really big because of movies and vice versa.
Yeah.
But nowadays we don't really have that. And then the first Black Panther film did a really great soundtrack. I loved, there was some great Weekend stuff. I really loved the song from SZA and Kendrick Lamar, All the Stars. Fantastic song. Mm. And again, they've come out and released something just absolutely stunning for this film.
Yeah. Apparently Rihanna was sort of first choice for the soundtrack, in part because she's recently become a mother, and they said, we knew that she was at a point in her life as well where she was focusing on different things, focused on business, motherhood, which is a big theme within the film. So, you know, they were crossing their fingers that it could work out.
And yeah, and she saw it and went,
it did.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, it's her first solo thing since 2016, I think I read.
Which is so interesting because for a while there, she released a new album every year for, I can't remember how many years it was, but a lot. She released a lot of music over the years. Yeah. And then she just stopped.
Well, I guess she could, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, God, no. And that wasn't a criticism of her.
No, but, because she's such, obviously, a talented lady. Not only singer, but she business brain on her because Fenty, I mean, singing's really just her pocket money, isn't it? Fenty, her beauty line, is like, what's she worth now? I think Forbes has her net worth at $1.7 billion. Wow. And 1.4 of that is from Fenty.
Yeah.
So that's
You know, she is up there as an icon of the music industry, and
started so young as well.
Yep,
because she was only born in 88. She's only still 34 years old.
Yeah, I know. And
it's
just
crazy.
You just think about like the how iconic some of those songs were.
Yeah,
remember when Umbrella came out?
She must have been darn near 20 years old.
Yeah,
like gosh.
Yeah, good stuff.
What a lady.
All right, number three, it is George Ezra and Green Green Grass.
She said, green, green grass, blue, blue sky. You better throw a party on the day that I die. Green, green grass, blue, blue sky. You better throw a party on the day that I die. We go together, Adam and Eve. But the girl is so much more than just another.
The song got to 3 in the UK and 2 in Belgium and Poland.
Oh, didn't chart here at all.
Did not chart here at all.
Okay. It's a fun song.
Oh, your voice went high.
You know, no, it's not my favourite. George Ezra, his music is catchy.
Yeah.
His music is catchy, but it's weird. I like the shotgun one. I've been riding shotgun.
Yeah,
that's
probably my favourite. He's had some great songs over the years. Yeah. I admit that I had never heard this song until.
Oh, really?
I had never heard it.
Ah, not even at the Queen's Jubilee.
I didn't watch the Queen's Jubilee.
Oh, I did.
Sorry.
George Ezra performed, and he performed this song, but he had to change some lyrics because you didn't want to be singing to the Queen and you better throw a party on the day that I die. Like that, yeah.
So yeah.
They changed the words.
There you go. No, I didn't. I didn't watch it.
Oh, there you go. Catchy song though.
Yeah, very catchy song. I was actually, because I'd read about it before I actually listened to the song.
Mm.
So it was so much more upbeat than it sounded like it was going to be.
Yeah.
Because it came from a trip that George took to the Caribbean island of St. Lucia with a couple of close friends in Christmas 2018. As they sat at a beach bar drinking homemade rum punch, loud music kicked in 3 streets back from the sea. Half an hour later, he went to check on the source of the music and he discovered a street party with 3 different sound systems and people cooking and dancing. He asked a girl working in the shop what was going on and she told him it was a funeral day celebrating 3 lives in their community that they'd lost. The experience stopped Ezra in his tracks as it was totally different to how people approached the end of life back home in England for him.
Yeah. Hence the, you better throw a party on the day that I die.
I mean, you know, for me, don't throw it the day I die, you know.
A few days later?
Yeah, a few days later.
Spend a few days crying.
Yeah, you know, cry, and then you can party. Like, you know what? The funeral. Have a party. But mourn me.
Oh, yes, I want whales.
Morning, I want people throwing themselves.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, I think the imagery is lovely.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, he relies heavily on life experience and jotting things down in his diary for inspiration for many of his songs. So much so that when COVID-19 hit us, he feared that stuck in lockdown, he of course wouldn't have any material for, you know, his new album. And so he had to go back over his old journals, yeah. And that's where this came up because he was doing nothing. So yeah, this was from a 2018 trip. Mm.
Yes, yeah, because he thought, you know, he was ready. He did a show at Royal Albert Hall and was ready, was making plans, was going to go out back on the road and do lots of things and wah, wah, wah.
Weren't we all?
Yeah.
Weren't we all?
Yes, yeah. So he wrote this song with the track's producers, Joel Pott, who's a former athlete, and also with Stuart Price, who has done some really amazing work over the years with people such as Dua Lipa, The Killers, and
Madonna,
the Confessions on a Dance Floor album, which...
Ah, you know, that one. That was a good album.
Good album.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Apparently, George Ezra, very distinct voice, obviously. He initially struggled with singing, apparently couldn't hit a note, he says.
Wow. And then, there's hope for all of you.
Then, get this, started out in a Wheatus tribute band. You remember Wheatus?
Teenage Dirtbag.
Yeah. Who knew that there would be a Wheatus tribute band?
Yeah, I only know one of their songs.
Songs did they have? But, yeah, he was in a Wheatus tribute band singing the female parts, no less.
I got the tickets to Iron Maiden.
How on earth does George Ezra's low, low voice translate to that? The mind boggles.
There you go.
Mm. Fun fact.
I haven't seen a Wheatus cover band. In fact, I haven't seen Wheatus live.
No, nor will we ever, probably.
All right.
Let's move along.
Let's move on to number two, and it is Florence and the Machine and King.
I need my golden crown of sorrow.
The song reached 54 in the UK and was biggest in New Zealand, where it got to 11.
Ooh, that's really strange that it got to 11 there and zero here.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I didn't know this song. I do like Florence and the Machine, but I guess I've lost them a little over the years.
I didn't know it either, but it's a good song.
Yeah, and, you know... message-wise, very powerful message.
Very personal song, yeah, yeah. All about, I guess, facing that gender thing about, you know, I'm doing this. Because very much in her musical career, she said she's been inspired by male figures and has been sort of put herself out there as one, matching the men and all of that. But now she's in her 30s and wondering, well, what if I want to have a family as well? How easy is that? To have that balance, probably not as easy for me as it's going to be for the men. And it's that weird, thing.
You know, and it's that interesting thing. And I think, you know, every woman gets to a stage and if they haven't had kids, it's one of the first questions that people ask. So when are you going to have children?
Yeah. And I guess you would have to think, am I going to regret not doing that? Because look at the career she's had. What an amazing career.
Yeah.
And she is king. She's matched. She's like...
Yeah.
Yeah. But what have I given up to do that, I guess. Yeah. It's a hard one.
Yeah, so, and it's a very introspective song, you know, because she wrote it in her mid-30s. Mm. So, you know, that is the time when, you know, she has to really make that decision.
Yeah.
Am I going to do this? Interesting song. And I think, you really hear that. And I mean, and you know, we talked about before Rihanna, Florence also has an incredibly emotive voice.
Yes. Yes.
Like it's all about the emotion.
Absolutely. Pretty much all.
Yeah. But yeah, I loved a lot of Florence's stuff over the years. Dog Day Afternoon, such a great song.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the first one I ever...
I think because it's when I was in Melbourne and the girl that I used to get a lift with to Neighbours, she was really into Florence and the Machine. So I think I learned about her quite early.
Okay.
And I love the song. Was it with Calvin Harris she did a song?
I don't know a lot of her catalogue.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So she played the song for the first time. I was reading this and I was like, oh, is this in Australia? And then I realised, no. Mm. She played it for the first time during a show at Newcastle's O2 City Hall. But, of course, Newcastle in the UK, not Newcastle in.
You were like, really?
Yeah.
Newcastle? Interesting. Apparently her and Taylor Swift are good pals, which you wouldn't expect.
Well, Jack Antonoff, who's written a lot of stuff with Taylor, is the co-writer of this song.
Of course. Yeah, because Taylor's come out saying she's the most fun person to dance with at a party, but then 5 minutes later you find yourself sitting on the stairs with her having an in-depth conversation about love and heartbreak, which I imagine you would.
Yeah.
She's kind of into that all, you know, dark imagery.
And she's Welsh, isn't she?
I don't know.
In my mind she's Welsh. I apologise if she is not.
I don't know.
Oh, no, it's because her last name's Welsh. That's why.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm not sure.
Oh, God, there you go. I'm tired. That's why in my head I'm saying Welsh, because it's her last name.
Of course. Of course.
Oh, I had a late night.
The film clip as well is quite cool. Did you watch the film clip?
I haven't. I didn't watch it.
Oh, she's got this massive gown on and she, like, can fly, and she's breaking necks of people. Like, it's really, yeah, you should have a look.
I will. Cool. I will. All right, that was number two. Now let's go to number one, and we did just mention her.
Yeah, speaking of Taylor Swift.
It's Taylor Swift and Antihero.
It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. At tea time, everybody agrees. I'll stare directly at the sun, but never in the mirror. It must be exhausting, always rooting for the antihero.
Went to number one pretty much everywhere.
Is it still on
the... It is still number one as of recording in Australia. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Very recent song. I really do like Taylor Swift a lot.
Yeah, I love a lot of what she has done. She lost me for a couple of years there.
Oh, which years?
Around the...
Look what you made me do.
Yeah.
Really?
Reputation era is where she lost me a little.
I loved Reputation.
And then I didn't really come back until Folklore. Where I love Folklore. Folklore and Evermore. I like Folklore more than Evermore. But
okay.
I like that. I like her less produced.
Okay.
I like the raw sound.
Yeah. I think she does both well, but yeah.
Oh, I understand why people love it. Yeah, it's just for my own personal preference. That's, you know.
Yeah. This isn't one of my favourite Taylor moments, but she says it is for her. Apparently it's one of the favourite songs she's ever written, saying she really doesn't think she's delved this far into her insecurities in detail before.
And I guess maybe it's because she's in a happy relationship and has been for a while.
Is she?
Yeah.
Who's she dating?
Oh, I can't remember his name. He's an actor as well.
Oh,
is it
okay.
Joe someone? I feel like I might be.
Okay.
But yeah, maybe it's because, you know, she's not writing about you did this to me. She's looking inwards instead.
Ooh.
And writing about herself instead of about breakups.
Maybe.
And I think the concept for the album is really incredible. It's all about, you know, things that happen at midnight.
Yes. What happens in your head. And
Yeah. For me, you know what happens at midnight?
Sleep. Me too.
I know. I got to bed after midnight last night and it was quite rude for me, you know?
Yeah. I think I did too. Anyway. She recorded this. We just were talking about him before. Jack Antonoff. He collaborates with her heaps.
Yes, and clearly they work really well together, and he played acoustic guitar and did the backing vocals.
Mm. She also wrote and directed the video clip.
The controversial video clip that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Did, and I looked for it online and I couldn't find the original.
Yeah.
You can see obviously where they've taken that little tiny thing out where she looks down at the scale and it says, well, fat.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know. I don't see why that was a big issue. To be honest, I don't.
You know what? I think it was misguided and I think it was a mistake, but I don't think it was... I just think people love to jump on things.
They really do, because you get the same message from watching the film clip now. She's still skinny girl standing on a scale, looking down and going, huh, and it sends the same message.
Yeah.
So what? There was a, you look down and the word fat is there. Like, it's, come on, people. And that cancel culture and the, like, oh, I don't know. She's been through that before too, with the whole reputation stuff and Kim Kardashian. What was she?
I feel like we're getting into that. All right, so I was actually reading something that apparently all of these old Kanye West fans are now coming out saying we were actually wrong.
Yeah, right.
We are now going to support Taylor Swift because Kanye West, no. Hey. Now if somebody needs to be cancelled, it's that man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, after what his latest
Let's not talk about it. But we say no to Kanye West on this podcast.
Yes.
So it was her second UK number one after Look What You Made Me Do. but in the US, it was her ninth number one.
Wow.
And every one of the 13 tracks from the standard version of Midnights occupied spots on the top 15 on its first week of release.
What? Say that again? Like all of the tracks?
So there were 13 songs on the album.
Yeah.
Those songs made up the top 15. So only two other songs, which one of them would have been Unholy, made up the top.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I just think it's a bit crap. The way that they do charts now, it's all from streaming.
Oh, okay. So everyone was listening to that.
Everyone listened to the album, so it ended up on the...
Wow.
Instead of actually having singles on the singles charts.
Yeah, that's a bit weird.
Because they call it the singles charts. Yeah. So an album track's not a single.
Yeah.
Which is why I hate the charts now as well. Okay. And like songs just hang around for so long now because people still play them. And I think that's great that people still play them, but it's like...
Really? Yeah, in terms of charts, you've got to move over and...
I'm sounding so old.
Back in the day. Oh, dear. But, yeah, obviously Taylor is a talented lady. She started super young.
Yeah.
When she was like... When did she have her first big song? 16, I think she was.
Yeah, because the first album internationally wasn't as big.
Mm.
And then that second album when she came out, when Love Story came out, that just... changed. I remember hearing Love Story as well and just it was such a great song. It was so different.
Yeah.
She really did create a genre.
Yeah.
Or made a genre, you know, really popular. You know, she's a leader and I think she's inspiring. Did you ever watch her Netflix documentary?
I did, Miss Americana.
Yeah. And that may have been when I changed my mind back about her again as well.
Okay.
Because I think I was a bit on the anti-Taylor train for a while and then I watched that and I was like, oh, okay. I get you.
I've never been anti-Taylor. Mm. In fact, Taylor is one of the concerts, if she comes, when's she due to come to Australia next, do you think? Because my daughter would like to see Taylor.
Yeah.
She's probably due in it, what, a year or two maybe?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's been a while since she's been here. Hmm. Anyway, watch this space.
We shall see. But interestingly, her concerts are causing a little bit of controversy at the moment as well.
Are they?
Just not her, but Ticketmaster, who has big, they control everything in the US because they combine with Live Nation, and they stuffed up the rollout for her concert tour. And so people were like having to keep, like, were online for ages and they're getting booted out of lines.
Oh, that's right. I remember hearing something about that on the news.
And artists are quite afraid to stand up to Ticketmaster, but I feel like Taylor's flirting with it at the moment.
Yeah, right.
She's very unhappy that they have stuffed up. Yeah. The rollout of her concert tickets.
Yeah, you've got one job. Like, sell the tickets, please.
Literally one job. It's in your name.
Yeah. Look it up.
Take master out. Ticket novice.
Oh, dear. Well, that was an interesting top five.
Yes.
Yeah. Very eclectic mix.
Very eclectic mix. All right. Well, now it's Christmas. Let's talk about some Christmas songs.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's start off with a little bit of Paul McCartney, Wonderful Christmas Time.
The party's on, the spirit's up, we're here tonight, and that's enough, simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
The song reached 38 in Australia, 28 in the US, and 6 in the UK. Couple of disclaimers. We should actually say Paul McCartney and the Wings, even though the Wings had nothing to do with the song.
Oh, well, then why should we say the Wings?
Well, because that's who it's credited to.
Oh, I guess, because that was his band at the time.
And also, the song did come out in November 1979, but didn't actually chart in Australia until 1980.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's our last episode. What are you going to do?
Come for us.
Yeah.
It's a song that I guess continues to receive substantial airplay every Christmas.
Yeah, and it really is the thing to have a good Christmas song.
Oh, yeah.
That's the way to make money.
It is.
Like Mariah Carey.
Well, everyone tries to do it though now,
yes.
Right?
I know, but they're not doing it as successfully. It's been harder for people to create a brand new Christmas song.
I really like some of the new ones. I love Elton John and Ed Sheeran's one, Merry Christmas.
My favourite. Harking back to earlier in the episode, Kelly Clarkson,
Underneath
Christmas is Cancelled. Christmas, that came out last year. Christmas Isn't Cancelled, Just You.
Oh, I must listen
Such
to that.
Such a good song.
Yeah, I love Underneath the Tree as well.
Yeah, so I feel like she's coming close.
Yeah.
And there are a few people that sort of pop through.
Ariana Grande with her Santa Tell Me. That's cute. Taylor Swift, Christmas Tree Farm.
Yeah, but they're not as... they're not as iconic as Wonderful Christmas Time, All I Want for Christmas, Last Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, even Bieber's bloody Christmas song is probably bigger, you know, than some of them. Maybe he had a Christmas song. I can't remember what it is
Bieber
now.
Bieber has a Christmas song anyway.
He was very young.
So I don't... Like, I love Paul McCartney, obviously.
Are you going to say you don't like this song?
No, I mean, I what I'll say is...
I am shocked and aghast.
I like the song. He's a great songwriter. I think, though, the production of it, and I know why, of course, he was playing around with a very early synthesizer model called Sequential Circuits Prophet 5, which is, I'm sure back in the day was top of the line new technology. It just sounds, it doesn't age well, I guess.
But it has been used in some big songs.
Yeah.
It was used in Betty Davis Eyes and the Doobie Brothers' What a Fool Believes. Mm. What a fool believes. Great song.
Yeah. I just think for this song, because it's all that bang, bouncy. It just sounds a bit meh. I think it would have been a better song if he'd recorded it with a proper band.
You know what? We're going to agree to disagree.
You like the
I really love it because it sets it aside.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been sampled by De La Soul, because I think it has that original quality that other songs don't have, which is probably why it's enduring. And I think Paul McCartney's voice is just really stunning on it.
Paul McCartney's voice is stunning.
Yeah.
He's obviously
an
amazing musician. He what?
Sounds like Velvet. His voice.
I thought you said it sounds like a girl, though. I was about to
Velvet.
Velvet. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
And Wings is probably not one of my favourite periods of Paul McCartney's career, but this is a great song.
Yeah. All four of the Beatles had different Christmas songs as well.
Yeah, and if you think John Lennon had one of the most iconic Christmas songs of all time.
Happy Christmas, War is Over.
Yes. Yeah, I heard that the other day again. It came on. I was like, oh, such a good song.
Such a good song.
Again, covered by so many people.
Yeah, yeah. Ringo wrote I Want to Be Santa Claus.
I don't know that one.
Have a listen. And George, I had to look his up. His wasn't actually a Christmas song. His is more a New Year's song called Ding Dong, Ding Dong. So it's still to do with the festive season. So we'll slip it in there. Yeah.
Okay. So according to Forbes, another industry source estimates that McCartney earns over $400,000 royalty a year from this song.
I can imagine that would happen.
Yeah.
$400,000 this day and age isn't that much money.
A year? For one song that you wrote in 1979?
You think how many millions Mariah's making. She makes like 80 million off All I Want for Christmas, doesn't she? So yeah, 400,000 is like...
Also remember that streaming is ruining the music industry.
Yeah.
Artists are not paid for streams very well.
Mm. Then I wonder how Mariah's getting all her coin from All I Want for
Probably
Christmas.
Probably from advertising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's where money comes from now for music.
And this would still be used in advertising and, but to a lesser extent. I can imagine he makes some fairly good coin.
And I would be happy with $400,000 for a song I wrote in 1979.
100% I would. Because
if I wrote a song in 1979, I was four.
But good Christmas song. Not my favourite, but yeah,
not my favourite Christmas song either. But if it comes on, I'll happily sing along to it.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. It's catchy. What's our next? Oh, I know.
Now our next one. I just went as gay as I could.
Yeah, you did.
It is the Weather Girls and Dear Santa, Bring Me a Man This Christmas. Didn't actually chart.
Oh.
Well, if you give this sass to this song, I'll glass you.
Buddy, if you will recall, I think the Weather Girls were one of my first ever classic picks on this podcast 3 years ago. So I have no problem with the Weather Girls. This song
is iconic.
It's not, I don't know.
You know what? Hate speech.
You had to get it in there.
There you go.
It's not hate speech. It's just not as fun as It's Raining Men. Like, I was waiting. When I was watching the film clip, I was so super excited for where it was going to go because it opens with that shot and you just see them in the lounge room and it's like they're doing their thing that they do. And I was waiting for the bust out of the fabulousness and the weird stuff and the green screen. But nothing. Like they had the four disco dancing ladies kind of behind them.
With the big hair.
It was just a little bit of a, yeah.
Oh, no, I love it. I think it is camp as hell. And you know what? Christmas should be as camp as hell.
Why
this
not?
Christmas, let's make it camper.
Tis the season.
Tis the season to be camp. I think it's a lot of fun. And it is very much like It's Raining Men, written by the same people, including Paul Schaefer, the guy who was the band leader on David Letterman. Was from the same
Hang
album.
Hang on a minute.
Success.
Sorry, did you just say... I'd never put that together.
We talked about it on that episode.
Okay, well, that was 3 years ago. You know I've got the memory of Dory. Wow, Paul Schaefer. Okay, cool.
Yeah, he co-wrote that song. So sitting down writing, Dear Santa, please bring me a man this Christmas.
Yeah.
Love it. But, you know, their voices, redonkulous.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great that they had the great career that they did have, considering their size and stuff, like, because...
Well, considering, and I will justify what you said by saying that the music industry is a shallow and horrible
Absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely, and that's what I meant by that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a stick figure myself. Like, I'm not dissing their side, but the fact that they were able to break through.
Yes.
You know, not looking like a tiny...
I just think it's really interesting because clearly they're religious ladies. You know, Church of God in Christ is where they met. They were in the choir there. And then they went and worked with Sylvester, who very, you know, camp icon who did, you know, drag, incredibly gay disco scene. They were his backing singers. And so Sylvester was the one who introduced them to the world.
Yeah.
And Sylvester's so fabulous. You know, the late, great Sylvester, who sadly passed in the late 80s, really made some great music. Mighty Real, Do You Want to Funk. Great songs.
Good songs.
Do you want to funk with me? I love it. Oh, God, I love that song.
But the Weather Girls have continued on too over the years.
Martha Moore.
Well, yes, she did go on to have, because she was doing vocals.
She went on to have her voice stolen by so many people.
Lots of people have stolen her voice.
CNC Music Factory, Black Box. There was somebody else as well. So she's won a lot of money in court over the years.
But even the Weather Girls themselves, they're still in operation. They're not obviously the original members anymore. I think the two members now are Dinelle Rhodes and Dorilyn Lyles. Sorry if I've got the pronunciation wrong there. Dinelle Rhodes is, of course, daughter to Izora Armstead. Because Izora actually reformed it with her daughter back in, the early 2000s, I think. And, yeah, so they've released stuff as recently as 2018.
And, you know, and probably because Martha went on to do bigger and better things and, you know, she is a cultural icon, Martha Wash.
Yeah.
You know, she appears in early seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race as a judge.
That's right. Yeah,
you know, and there was the great splits that happened and, yeah.
Yes.
Martha Wash, just ridiculous voice. One of my favourite voices. Like, you just hear it and you just go, oh.
Talent.
Sing it, sister. But we've covered so many Christmas songs over the years. So, but I really enjoy this song, and I'll listen to it at Christmas, and I'll, you know, feel camp, and it's what I'm thankful for.
And merry.
Yes.
Lovely.
And merry and gay. All right, now let's have a look at our last Christmas song for the year. And officially it's not actually a Christmas song, but it is.
Yeah. I had never equated this as a Christmas song before, but then watching the film clip makes it a Christmas song.
And I think if you ask anybody in England or the UK, it's a Christmas song to them.
Can you guess what song we're talking
about? Well, here
about,
we go. It is Frankie Goes to Hollywood and The Power of Love. The song reached 4 in Australia and 1 in Iceland and the UK.
Not in the US?
No.
Huh. Weird. This is a beautiful song.
Stunning.
Stunning. I love it. Yeah. Love it.
There and, you know, Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Camp. Yeah.
What a nice song to end our
there
podcast.
We go. Yeah. And it is. It is a beautiful song for us to finish on. It's just, and it's a song that is timeless.
Yes.
Like, you still hear it now. And I think that was when there was a beautiful cover a few years ago by Gabrielle Aplin, and she made it her own, but just kept that heart of the song. And those lyrics are so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a wonderfully written song. But then I don't want to take anything away from the production or Holly's vocals either, because he's such a great vocalist.
Such a great vocalist. Oh, my goodness.
It deals with spirituality and religion, and I just think it's really interesting that it's their third single. So the first one, Relax, was about sex. Two Tribes was about politics, and then the third single was about religion. All of the things you were told you shouldn't talk about.
Yeah. They're like, nah.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
And doing took it. All three singles to number one in the UK.
Do you know, they actually announced this as their third number one single before it ever got there. In an advertising campaign for the song, they just declared that it was their third number one before it even was out there. Like, how cool is that?
It wouldn't have been if it wasn't.
They're like, can you imagine them sweating going, sweats, please, yeah, please, please, please.
I know,
please.
It would have been like they were confident until that very moment the charts were about to come out. That's when you would have been like, oh, no, it's not going to happen.
Well, because actually it mightn't have. Like, because it was only number one for a week, I think, because it happened the same year as, of course, Band-Aid, Do They Know It's Christmas.
Yeah.
So, of course, that obliterated everything because everyone bought that. But thankfully they got in just before that and were number one for that week.
And it equaled the feat of fellow Liverpool band Jerry and the Pacemakers, whose first three singles also topped the UK charts. When their fourth single, Welcome to the Pleasure Dome, Frankie Goes to Hollywood's fourth single, peaked at 2, this meant that they were still tied with Jerry and the Pacemakers, because they also, on their fourth release, went to number 2. But, of course, all of this was outdone years later when the Spice Girls' first 6 singles went to number 1.
Oh, yeah. Spice Girls.
So they were like, thanks for coming.
We've got this.
Yeah.
Hold my drink.
I'll tell you what we want, what we really, really want, your record.
Yeah, like we were saying before, the film clip makes it about Christmas.
Yeah, and directed by Godley and Cream, who just did so many great music videos over the years.
They were members of the band 10cc.
Yeah, and then they had their own songs as well out.
Yeah.
great bands, but then, yeah, Ray made some really iconic music videos of the 80s. But yes, but when you look at the music video, you go, Christmas, it's all about Christmas, and that's what they've made the song.
Yeah. So the video, because other stuff of theirs has been banned, like I think Two Tribes was banned, I think. This still caused a bit of trouble for the group because of the depiction of the nativity scene. And also on its first showing, it didn't actually show any band members in the clip, which I don't know why that got up people's noses. But then they were subsequently added, you know, as the border, the frame, yeah. their little faces. Here we are.
We're doing that right now.
We're here.
Yeah. Great song, great Christmas number one, and yeah.
Now it will forever be a Christmas song to me.
There you go. Mm. Now, that was the last song that we're going to talk about. But before we sign out, a few of our listeners said some really lovely things.
Oh, they did.
Insert the tracks here.
Hi, Wayne and Emma. Fergus from the UK here. Thank you very much for keeping us entertained for the past 3 years. We're all very sorry to hear that the podcast is finishing. All great things, they say, inevitably come to an end. Best wishes to you both.
Hey, Wayne and Emma, this is Jacinta here. I have absolutely loved the podcast, every single episode. Thank you so much for taking us for a walk down memory lane with all the music, with all the facts, and especially with all the fun. Thank you so much. It has been great to listen to you guys, and I wish you all the best.
Hey, Wayne and Emma, this is Wolfgang. I just quickly want to say thank you for 70 amazing episodes of You, Me, the 80s and the 90s, and for all the fun time I had listening to them. Thank you for entertaining me every second Sunday. I will miss you too and your great episodes from the podcast so much. Have a wonderful Christmas time in Australia and all the best wishes to you for 2023 from Germany. Your big podcast fan, Wolfgang. Bye-bye. See you soon.
Hi, Emma Louise and Wayne. It's Christina from Ominous Nonsense. Here to thank you for 2.5 years of nostalgia, tunes, laughs, and fun. Look, You, Me, the 80s and the 90s is one of my favourite podcasts, and I'll miss hearing your Aussie accents every fortnight. Wishing you the best of luck for the future, and remember, you're iconic.
Oh, Emma Louise, Wayne, oh, what am I going to do? Oh, honestly, though, guys, goodbye and good luck in all of your future endeavours. You leave a legacy of great knowledge, passion, enjoyment for music, as well as a little bit of hate speech. But, you know, you can't like everything. But I love this podcast, and it's going to leave a giant hole in my routine from now on. What are you doing to me, Australia? We've only just got rid of Neighbours. Personally, though, I'm so proud to have been part of the podcast with my recordings and the lovely review you did of Pulp's Different Class. I know whatever you do in the future is going to be an absolute success. I hope this is not the end, big fat full stop. I'm hoping that you'll keep in touch and maybe do the odd little recording every now and then, just to keep your toe in the water. Goodbye, good luck, and I'm sure we'll hear from you soon.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's going to make me cry.
Yeah, really, really lovely. Thank you. And it really is wonderful to know that people listened to what we talked about and enjoyed and were waiting for a new episode. So, yeah, thank you. That really means a lot to us.
It really does. It's been super fun doing this, and it's got us through, God, this podcast. I am going to get emotional. All of COVID, like we did this through all of that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I love you.
Love you too.
Thanks for doing this for 3 years and thank you all for listening. And, yeah, remember that songs are therapy. Or is it? Oh, my God, I forgot the
tagline. Oh, my God, what a talk.
Songs are memories and music is therapy. Thank you so much for listening.
Signing off for the last time. Bye.
Bye-bye.